Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Ches be'Iyar Parshas Naso, Tashin Ayin Dalas, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 27 May, 2014, webcasting from the land of holiness just visited by His alleged holiness, the Pope of Rome. Once upon a time, Rome was ruled by pagan polytheists, where the so-called triune gods were especially important until the fourth century, when Rome adopted the tripartite Christian Godhead. Pagan Rome savaged the Jewish people, occupied our country for two centuries, and put down two rebellions mercilessly. Then Rome went Christian and continued to persecute and kill Jews in basically every generation for the next 2,000 years. And here these past 2 days was the current head of the Church of Rome on the same page with this generation's primary Jew killers, the Arabs. He also apparently is still being fed by his pagan forebears, for he came across as incapable of confronting the guilt of his organization in particular over these 2,000 years, and in particular for the terrible truth that from Hitler on down there were many men and women baptized in his church whose baptism apparently did nothing to prevent them from doing the devil's work. I admit that as an individual man, he may have never harmed a Jew, done anyone much evil, but he came here not in the garb of a normal man, but the CEO of Roman Catholics, and in that capacity he spoke not one word of remorse for the sins of his flock over thousands of years. He spoke in generalities. At the Holocaust Memorial Museum and Shrine, Yad Vashem, yesterday, he compared the Holocaust to idolatry and expressed shame in, quote, what man, created in God's image, was capable of doing. I don't think a Catholic priest whose buildings are full of idols should be complaining about idolatry. In front of Prime Minister Netanyahu and former chief rabbi and Holocaust survivor Yisrael Meir Lau, in that somber and dark hall of remembrance at Yad Vashem, where such ceremonies are held, he beseeched God to, quote, grant us the grace to be ashamed of what we men have done. The Nazi genocide was massive idolatry. That must never happen again, close quote. And again, addressing mankind in its collective identity embodied in the Bible's figure of Adam, who led you to presume that you are the master of good and evil? Excuse me, but this is taurine excreta. Mankind, in its generality, did not massacre us Jews. Overwhelmingly, our murderers were men and women identified with his belief system, even if only nominally. Germany was, I think, 99% formally Christian, mostly Lutherans, a minority of Catholics, but a significantly large enough one to be a major player and even to fund their own Catholic Party, as it was called, which threw in its lot with the Nazi Party. Not a word about that at Yad Vashem yesterday from the pontiff. And when he signed the guest book there, he added the inscription, quote, with shame for what man, who was created in the image of God, was able to do, with shame for the fact that man made himself into God and sacrificed his brothers, never again, close quote. But again I say, excuse me, but man was not the culprit. Most of mankind had nothing to do with the extermination of the 6 million. The vast land of China and its people had nothing to do with it. The vast masses in the Indian subcontinent, Hindus primarily, had nothing to do with it. The Igbos in Nigeria and other African tribes also had nothing to do with what formerly Christian people did to us, and among them many Roman Catholics, just like him, who he refused to mention. He reached out in Bethlehem to touch the security barrier that Israel was forced to build at immense cost in order to commiserate with the Arabs inconvenienced by it. Now, without once bringing to his lips the hundreds of Jews murdered by these so-called Palestinians and the thousands more wounded and crippled by them, he could reference the Jews massacred 70 years ago in Europe, but not the Jews massacred here 7 years ago. Worse, in politically correct fashion, the fashion of this generation's Arab and Muslim suicide massacre freaks, when escorted to the Israeli memorial to these victims of terror in order to match his unscheduled homage to the security barrier, the Pope acted out the same body language, but said, quote, I pray for all these victims, for the victims of terrorism in the world, close quote. This is standard anti-Jew operating procedure in our time. Singling out Jewish suffering, if only for a moment, is a no-no. Focusing the mind just on the persecution of Jews, commonly as the result of some satanic fever in the brain, is not allowed. One may mention anti-Semitism and the suffering of the Jews due to it, but then one must immediately bring up similar hates and persecutions, you know, like on every International Holocaust Day in January. Speakers commonly groan over the Holocaust of the Jews and the scourge of racism wherever it is found. We remember the Holocaust and its victims and the persecution of Muslims at the hands of homicidal Islamophobes. We remember sexist, chauvinist persecution of women. We remember the bigotry against illegal aliens and sodomites, and in particular, lesbian illegals. We cry over those who have suffered for being too short, the victims of heightism, and the bald guys who get laughed at. I think the record of Obama's prepared remarks having to do with the Holocaust over the years of his presidency, the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, will show the same consistent pattern. Mentioned the persecution of the Jews, you got to bring in every other group as well. It's the PLO Arabs who in the 1960s and 70s denied they were terrorists, but then because they were asked to forswear terrorism in order to become respectable, they learned to say, we oppose all terrorism, including state terrorism, meaning IDF anti-terror operations. In their cracked and twisted ethical universe, PLO terrorists are soldiers fighting for their freedom, and the uniformed soldiers of Israel who clash with them are the real terrorists. Think of that book by Samantha Power on genocides in the plural, in which she compared several massacres and called them all genocides when this was a shameless abuse of language. The word genocide was invented by a Polish Jew, a scholar, Raphael Lemkin, after the Holocaust to describe what had just happened to the Jewish people in World War II, because no word that he knew in any of several European languages sufficed to describe Hitler's crusade, which was unique in human history and remains so. It's a well-known phenomenon in human history, this overrunning of one people by another, hungry for their land and other wealth, for their women, who slaughter without mercy in vast numbers. The Turks did it in World War I to the Armenians, who, unlike the Jews, were involved in the war against Turkey. The Turks wanted to drive the Armenians from their land as they saw it and attack mercilessly, sadistically, with the goal of increasing their material wealth, taking it from the Armenians, and doing horrible things to the people. What they did not do was to produce propaganda films liking Armenians to rats or microbes who had to be exterminated everywhere like a disease. Microbes with an infernal cosmic plan to take over the world. There's no record of any Turkish order to do any such thing. The Turks have a history of thuggish behavior, which we just saw last week. A deputy minister, I think it was, kicking a protester, and then Mr. Big himself, Erdogan, cursing out a demonstrator, maybe even slapping him, calling him an Israeli seaman. I personally have a connection to that horrible year of 1915, because as a boy in the 1950s, a wonderful neighborhood friend of mine was an American-born Armenian boy whose father and grandfather had survived the barbaric Turkish onslaught that year, both of whom I got to meet whenever I went over to his house to play. A wonderful family, solid people. What my friend's father went through as a little boy, and what his grandfather went through, was every bit as inhumanly horrific as anything any individual Jew in the Holocaust suffered. As individuals, Jews have no monopoly on human suffering. But what the Turks did was still no Holocaust. Adolf Hitler was out to seek out every Jew in the world and murder him and her because he believed Jews were not even human. No such Turkish propaganda against the Armenians played that role. But there was Samantha Power in her acclaimed book fashionably denying the uniquely diabolical ambition of the Holocaust. And here was the Pope during his visit, likewise balancing our suffering with those of the ancient ones. In our generation, the face of lying about Jews aka anti-Semitism, is moral equivalence, and a refusal to pin the tale of guilt for their barbaric terrorist atrocities against us on our mortal Arab Muslim enemies. The Pope could groan over what man, in general, did 70 years ago in Europe to us, but not what these savages have done to us, which forced us to build this most expensive public works project in Israeli history.
ואני תפילתי לך השם את רצון ואני תפילתי לך השם ואני תפילתי לך השם את רצון אלוקים ברוב חסדך אלוקים ענני 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 באמת אשתך אלוקים ברוב חסדך אלוקים ענני ענני, 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 באמת אשתך. שמת רצון ואני תפילתי לך לשם ואני תפילתי לך שמת רצון אלוקים ברוב חסדי
Yeah, this Pope Francis, while in Bethlehem yesterday, besides commiserating with our mortal enemies for the inconvenience of the security barrier, he spoke of the state of Palestine that he wants to see become a reality, which can only come at the expense of us Jews. So much for moral equivalence in that regard. Indeed, come to think of it, one of the truly unique features of what the world today calls the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is this perfect symmetry and balance between the two sides. We ancient Jews may have a right to a state in our ancient homeland, but so the ancient Palestinians have a right to statehood in their ancient homeland. Perfect balance. This clash may be unique in all of human history, for in most wars, one imagines, one side was more guilty, more the aggressor than the other. Not here. There is a perfect moral equation here, which the Pope of Rome believes exists, as do all enlightened thinkers in our time. This is the doctrine underpinning the enlightened belief, marketed by such as the famous doctor of political science, Martin Indyk, and it's called the two-state solution, which in practice means the evacuation from Judea and Samaria of, at a minimum, tens of thousands of Jews who must be driven from their homes, even if they have every right to remain in them. I say at a minimum because that is what our enlightened Princess of Peace, Tzipor Livni, calls for. She and Yair Lapid, etc. The two-state solution strives for balance. Two states in harmonious cooperation managing the land west of the Jordan River together. Two states of equal worth. This Pope supports in public the future establishment of the state of Palestine in the Holy Land, and never mind that what he calls his Bible contains not one word of Palestine or Palestinians. In other words, don't be fooled by this Pope's pleasant persona and how he acted out regret for the Holocaust. Underneath, he speaks the same party line as his predecessors and our savage neighbors. The Jews have too much land, which they grabbed illegally from its ancient owners, which land they refused to return. He spoke of a future state of Palestine, and to concretize his philosophy, instead of driving over the hill from Bethlehem into Jerusalem and to the Temple Mount on roads cleared of all traffic, which he could have done in like 10 minutes, he helicoptered from Bethlehem down to the coastal plain to Ben-Gurion Airport, which then had him driving 35 to 40 minutes back to Jerusalem. That helicopter was seen by the enemy as a purely political gesture in support of their claims against the people who killed the Pope's God. On the other hand, apart from the dishonest dissembling here, I'm not overly concerned by this man and his organization, for what I know of his church these days, they're in big trouble, thanks to their twisted eyes, ideas about the sex life of man, the very idea of glorifying celibacy for men and refusing to give birth for women, taken to its messianic conclusion, is pretty daft, I think. If all Catholics became as pious and as holy as their priests and their nuns, and refrained from all acts of procreation, Catholics would disappear. They would go the way of the Shaker community established in 19th century New England. In a related story on a Sunday, J-Post's man in London, Jerry Lewis, wrote up an address delivered by the new chief rabbi of Britain, Ephraim Mirvis, to the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland in Edinburgh last Thursday. He spoke in bromides about friendship between the religions in the past, but did confront the principal problem head-on, which was, if you remember, the Church's report of April of 2013, entitled, quote, "The Inheritance of Abraham : A Report on the Promised Land," in which the Church rejected the belief of many Christians and Jews that the Bible supports an essentially Jewish state of Israel. Quote, "The promises of the land of Israel were never intended to be taken literally," close quote. At the time, the Scottish Council of Jewish Communities pulled no punches in responding that this was, quote, "an outrage to everything that interfaith dialogue stands for." The report reads like an Inquisition-era polemic against Jews and Judaism, the arrogance of telling the Jewish people how to interpret Jewish texts and Jewish theology is breathtaking, close quote. Then again, that's been going on for about 2,000 years. And the Church responded by saying this, quote, "The report is against the injustices against the Palestinian people and how land is shared It is also a reflection of the use or misuse of Scripture to claim a divine right to land by any group. You hope I see a connection to the subject of the first segment this evening, the resistance to the Jews having something uniquely theirs. Everybody wants a piece of the action. The resistance is also at work in the cliché the Pope used in Bethlehem when speaking about the three Abrahamic religions, and the cliché about the Holy Land being holy to the three great monotheistic faiths. And I say, no, it's not. The Quran makes no reference whatsoever to Israel and to its holiness, and the Church of Rome established itself in Rome, not Jerusalem, as part of its crusade to bring the covenant to all people. Christianity saw Judaism as too provincial, too greedy, cliquish and clannish, didn't want to share the covenant, excluding everybody but themselves, and that's not right. Christianity is a universal faith, not tied to one land. Where in the Christian texts appended to Tanakh are Christians enjoined to live in the Holy Land and according to the personal and societal commandments found in the five books? It's simply not true that Christendom and Islam have had feelings for this land on a par with Jewish emotion and religious obligation. If so, the Muslims for 14 centuries would not have maintained it as a slum. And so Rabbi Mervith told his listeners of the, quote, clear, inextricable links between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. There's nothing like that in Christian or Muslim writing, I say. The five books contain 187 chapters, I think, and the first sentence in chapter 12 is God speaking to Abraham, he who had discovered Hashem, and telling him he has to go to a land that God will show him. And over the remaining 174 chapters, that promise is played out. And the five books ends with Moshe Rabbeinu, Abraham's great-grandson's great-grandson, standing on the east bank of the Jordan River, looking over longingly at the land promised to his great-grandfather's great-grandfather 470 years earlier. There's nothing like that moment in either Christian or Muslim scripture. And I'll end this segment with the classic complaint of Jews expressed by the Scottish Council. I'll repeat it, quote, the arrogance of telling Jewish people how to interpret Jewish texts. And I would add, when they can't even read them in the original. They say the promises of the land should not be taken literally? Okay. Then I say, in the New Testament, the resurrection of Jesus, after 3 days, shouldn't be taken literally either.
da ra ra da da ya na da ra 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 re
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, one of the top stories in Israel today was the vote on Sunday in Europe for the European Parliament, where the nasty far right, including shamelessly anti-Semitic parties, made significant gains in Greece and Hungary, Denmark, the UK, France. The factors in play were numerous, several economic problems, high unemployment, and the bitter resentment against the EU bureaucracy in Brussels. These are the Eurosceptics. I share their views. But also, for sure, the rising tide of Muslims, which is rightly freaking out a lot of Europeans. And then, of course, there's the anti-Semitic factor, the return of shameless public Jew hatred and Jew blaming for all of life's woes, which is such a common feature of Western society in generation after generation. Jewish leaders in Europe today rightly worried over Sunday's vote, further evidence of a deteriorating European culture with such as a long record of Jew hatred and violence in periods of instability. Today, the Israeli couple murdered in Brussels were laid to rest. Well, for sure, the prospects for Jewish life in Europe are growing darker every day, but I also take this vote to have a silver lining, perhaps, which is the possibility that it may signal an awakening in Europe, which must happen if Europe is to survive the Muslim onslaught, the Muslim conquest, this Muslim invasion, which has been the greatest and most successful in Islamic history. Since the year 711, when the Muslims crossed the Strait of Gibraltar into Spain, all the way to the assault on Vienna in 1683, that's 1,000 years, Muslims have aggressed against Europe. Muslims pillaged European shipping in this period. They came ashore into Europe, captured Christians, took them home as slaves. But today's invasion of Europe has had no precedent for its peaceful victory. It has been the most successful attack on Europe ever. And the Europeans simply have to wake up, do it, and resist it, or be interred in the memory banks of history. This selection may be evidence, or even encouragement, to some Europeans to fight back and preserve their culture. It's not too late, if the will is there.
נדברים ירב באכשר ויתרון שפו מסכם וברית לתרופה. נעקתכם יאזין שחקים שיפה.
Last item, I can't resist not passing on to you, who did not see it, a couple of Jay Leno's jokes when he was here the other day, emceeing some newfangled award ceremony cooked up here by somebody to honor former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who, as far as I know, has gone through his life with no involvement with Judaism and the Jewish people anywhere. Maybe the people behind the award want to lure him finally into spending some of his billions here. But never mind that. Leno's jokes were splendid, and one had to do with the fact that last month the Muslim Brotherhood agent in the Oval Office declared it Jewish American Heritage Month, and he said it was a chance to strengthen America's unbreakable bond with the nation of Israel, close quote. And Jay Leno said that the president knows it is unbreakable because he's been trying to break it for the last 5 years. And as for Israel itself, he reported that the Central Bureau of Statistics says the most popular boy's name is Noam, and the least popular boy's name is John Kerry. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday evening, and I'll be back on Thursday, God willing. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.